Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1997. The Giant Gold Robbery.
Hello. On more than one earlier broadcast, we've talked about the current Jewish program of extortion against Switzerland. But this is such a fascinating subject, I just can't stay away from it. Besides that, almost every day the Jews outreach themselves in setting new records for arrogance, deceit, and greed. It's really breathtaking to watch them. For the sake of review, the whole thing started last year when a group of Jews, looking around for a new way to milk more money from the so-called Holocaust, hit on the idea of announcing that Swiss bankers were keeping money that had been deposited by Jews before or during the Second World War, who had then died or been killed during the war. Like most clever swindles, this one contained a grain of truth. Among the dormant accounts in Swiss banks, there are some which did belong to Jews who died during the war. Every bank in the world accumulates dormant accounts, and some of these accounts undoubtedly were opened by Jews. Now, the Swiss bankers have standard procedures for dealing with their depositors and for handling dormant accounts. And those procedures have nothing at all to do with the race or ethnicity of the depositor. Jewish depositors are and always have been treated just like everyone else. The same efforts are made to contact the owners of dormant accounts, regardless of whether those owners are Jews or Gentiles. And regardless of what you think about bankers as a whole, Swiss bankers are generally recognized as especially reputable, as bankers who are especially careful to play by the rules. That's one of the reasons Swiss banks are so highly regarded around the world. If a group of Tibetans or Laplanders had begun raising a fuss about dormant accounts their grandfathers had opened in Swiss banks, the Swiss bankers would have dealt with them in the standard manner. The bankers would have said to them, "Just show us some proof that you are the legitimate heirs of depositors who have died, and we will give you any money in the accounts," and that would have been it. No one would have expected more than that, and no special media attention would have been given to the Tibetans or Laplanders. And in fact, before this particular swindle was launched last year, Jews, along with people of just about every other race and nationality on the planet, had claimed and been awarded dormant accounts in the standard way without any special difficulty. But of course, the Jews in the group which launched this scheme last year weren't interested in having dormant accounts handled in the standard way. They were interested in blackmail and extortion on a grand scale. And they had reason to believe that they could get away with it, while the Tibetans and Laplanders obviously couldn't. That reason was the control of the news and entertainment media by their fellow Jews. The first act in the scheme went like this. The schemers got together with some of their buddies in the media, and front page articles appeared simultaneously in newspapers all over the world to the effect that Swiss bankers were unscrupulously holding on to as much as $7 billion, which belonged to the heirs of so-called Holocaust victims. The members of the Jewish group wanted the Swiss bankers to turn this money over to them. The Swiss responded, as one might have expected, with denials and outrage. The president of Switzerland denounced the Jewish demands as an extortion attempt. And had only Tibetans or Laplanders been involved, that's where the affair would have ended. But instead, the Jewish media shifted into second gear and counterattacked, feigning outrage themselves over the charge of extortion. How could a bunch of nice Jewish boys possibly be involved in extortion, especially when the magic word Holocaust had been invoked to sanctify their claim for money? Then the Swiss made their first big mistake. They apologized for accusing the Jews of extortion. They explained their procedure for claiming dormant accounts. They hired public relations firms. They said that there couldn't possibly be $7 billion in dormant accounts belonging to Holocaust victims, but that there might be some money and that they would make another examination of their dormant accounts. They announced that, as a charitable act, they would simply donate $180 million to the Jews, not from dormant accounts, but from their own general funds, just for the sake of goodwill. The Swiss didn't understand the Jewish mentality. They didn't understand that Jews aren't people you can live with. With Jews, there's no compromising, but only the hard either-or. The Jews correctly viewed the Swiss apology and the Swiss offer of a charitable donation to Holocaust survivors as signs of weakness, and so they stepped up their demands. They got one of their step-and-fetch-it Gentile politicians involved, New York Senator Alphonse D'Amato, who is chairman of the Senate Banking Committee and who has made a career out of doing favors for the Jews. And they began escalating their demands and their threats. And the Swiss kept making mistakes. They kept apologizing and backtracking and trying to placate the Jews. Aside from their reputation for honesty, the big thing Swiss banks had going for them was their reputation for confidentiality. A person could put his money in a Swiss bank account and reasonably expect that no one would ever learn about it if he didn't announce the fact himself. Last month, in an attempt to prove to the world that they weren't hiding any Jewish money, Swiss bankers compromised their reputation for confidentiality by publishing a list of the names of the account holders for all 1,756 accounts they could find which had been dormant since the end of the Second World War. These accounts contained a total of approximately $40 million. Do you think this pleased the Jews a bit? They scrutinized the list, and the first thing they noted was that fewer than 10% of the names on it were Jewish. They didn't say much about this, however, except in their own Jewish community newspapers, which we aren't supposed to see, because it tended to deflate the fable they had concocted of the Swiss bankers hoarding the savings of many thousands of Jewish Holocaust victims, totaling billions of dollars. Instead, they began screaming that, based on a similarity of names, 8 of the 1,756 accounts on the list might belong to people who had been connected in one way or another with the German government during the war. There were names on the list which were the same as or similar to a former vice president of the Reichstag, Hitler's official photographer, the wife of a top SS official, and 5 others. "Oy vey, you've been doing business with the Nazis," the Jews shrieked. The Swiss reminded the Jews that Switzerland had been a neutral country during the war and that Swiss banks had customers from both sides of the conflict. Reminding everyone of that was another mistake for the poor Swiss. The Jews, Senator D'Amato, and the rest of the Jews' camp followers began moaning that the Swiss had really sympathized with the Germans, that they had really wanted the Germans to win and had helped the German war effort by trading with Germany. Now, that's another one of those little grains of truth in this whole fabric of lies that the Jews have constructed. A great many Swiss, especially in the German-speaking parts of the country, were pro-German. And, of course, they did carry on trade with both the Germans and their allies, as well as with the allies of the Jews, such as the United States and the Soviet Union. The Jews seized on the fact of Swiss trade with the Germans and began beating the Swiss on the heads with that. The gold the Germans gave the Swiss in return for manufactured products during the war probably had been confiscated from Jews, they screamed. Some of it probably was gold teeth extracted from Jewish concentration camp victims. Give it back! Give it back to us! The Swiss responded by apologizing for having remained neutral during the war and by donating another $100 million to the fund for Holocaust victims they already had set up. That's nowhere enough to satisfy one Jewish leader, Avraham Bork, the head of Israel's Jewish Agency. That's actually its name, the Jewish Agency. Bork has demanded for the Jews not only all the gold which had gone to Switzerland from Germany during the war to pay for manufactured goods, but also gold which the victorious Allies confiscated from Germany at the end of the war and have been doling out ever since to various countries occupied by the Germans during the war to compensate these countries for their wartime losses. Bork claims that this gold once belonged to Jews, and he has demanded that all of the vaults holding this gold be sealed until it is officially turned over to Jews. He has demanded, and I quote him exactly, that the corrupt division and distribution of Jewish spoils from World War II to world governments must immediately be ceased, and every last cent must be returned to Jewish hands, end of quote. Isn't that interesting wording? Every last cent must be returned to Jewish hands. Not necessarily to the hands of the Jews Bork claims originally owned the gold, since it would be impossible to determine who those Jews were, but just to Jewish hands. Just get it away from the Gentiles and put it into Jewish hands. The Jews will figure out what to do with it. Imagine how that demand would sound if, instead of Jews, Lutherans or Baptists were claiming the gold. During the war, the Soviet government forced millions of ethnic Germans, the so-called Volga Germans, off the land they had owned for 150 years since being invited to Russia by Catherine the Great, and deported them to Siberia. After the war, the communist and democratic victors forced millions of other ethnic Germans off their land in eastern Germany in a huge and murderous ethnic cleansing program to which the Western Allies consented. Most of these plundered and dispossessed Germans were Lutherans, and what was stolen from them dwarfs any claim the Jews have made. Imagine the Lutheran Church demanding today that it be compensated for everything that had been stolen from those plundered Germans during and after the war. We would laugh at the absurdity of the Church's claim. The fact that Avraham Bork and his fellow Jews make such a claim today tells us something about their mentality, about their ethnocentricity and sense of racial solidarity, about their us against them attitude toward the world, as well as about their greed for gold. And it tells us about the folly of thinking of Jews as merely people with a different religion, who become anything other than Jews when they change their religion. The reason that Avraham Bork can confidently make such demands while no Lutheran spokesman dares do the same is based on the fact of Jewish media control. The Jews have spent 60 years, since before the Second World War, using the media to complain about their mistreatment by the Germans, by the Poles, by the Ukrainians, by the Latvians, by the Lithuanians, by the Hungarians, by the Croatians, and so on. After the war, they poured such a deluge of pro-Jewish propaganda out of Hollywood that most Americans today think of Jews as being the principal victims of the Second World War. Almost no one has heard about what Jewish communism did to the Russians, the Ukrainians, the Poles, and the other European peoples unfortunate enough to be ruled by communists before, during, or after the Second World War. Almost no one has heard about the mass murder of millions of German civilians after the war. In fact, most Americans can't even give a good estimate of the number of Americans who died in combat during the war. But everybody has heard about the grossly inflated figure of 6 million Jews supposedly killed in gas chambers by the Germans and then converted into soap, lampshades, and gold dental fillings. This incessant Jewish Holocaust propaganda has got most people, including the Swiss, buffaloed. It has given the Jews a special status, a martyr status. Most people are afraid to criticize them or contradict them. But even the Swiss bankers and politicians who aren't fooled by the Jewish Holocaust exaggerations are afraid of the power of the Jewish media. They understand that the U.S. government is practically under the Jews' control. They understand that American politicians who are in the Jews' pockets, like Senator D'Amato, can cause them a lot of trouble. They understand that the Jews have enough political power through their media control to persuade the U.S. government to go along with a boycott of Switzerland if they demand one. And so, instead of standing up to the Jews, the Swiss keep on apologizing and trying to buy the Jewish blackmailers off. And the Jews, of course, continue to see this as weakness, and so they keep on pushing. They keep on demanding more. And hey, don't think that's because the Jews are greedy. They're not really interested in the gold, but only in the principle of the thing, they assure us. Israel Zinger, the secretary of the World Jewish Congress, one of the groups applying pressure to the Swiss, has announced, and I quote, "This is not about money. It is about justice," close quote. Right. You know, this business of demanding reparations for things which allegedly happened 50 or 60 years ago does bring up some interesting principles. The descendants of our black slaves in this country are a bit slower at spotting opportunities than the Jews are. But even they can recognize a profitable principle when they see one. They're beginning to talk about the reparations that white people owe them for slavery. They might want to add up all of the man hours their slave ancestors worked, multiply that by, say, $5 an hour, add interest at 6% since the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863, and present us with the bill. Why not? And hey, what about the Indians and the real estate they can claim we owe them for? Why should it be only the Jews who can get away with making such claims and with collecting on them? They've already extorted $55 billion in reparations from the German people since 1948. Suppose the Germans started figuring up what is owed to them. Or suppose the Scots presented a bill to the English. Or suppose the English presented a bill to the people of Normandy. Why is it only the Jews who are entitled to go back into history and add up their carefully nursed grievances and present a bill to the rest of the world? The latest concession they've blackmailed the Swiss into is a $5 billion so-called solidarity fund to be used to compensate, quote, victims of poverty, war, and genocide, close quote. A panel, a majority of whose members are Jews, of course, is to decide how to dole out this money after it is collected from the Swiss people. If the Swiss are prompt in coughing up this money, then the Jews say they will not organize an international boycott of Switzerland. Fortunately for the Swiss, however, they have at least one patriot among their politicians. He is a 56-year-old industrialist and member of the Swiss Parliament, Christoph Blocher, and he is telling the Swiss people that they ought not to give in to this blackmail. He is telling his people that they owe nothing to the Jews, and they ought to pay them nothing. and he is gaining strong support from Swiss voters. We'll see what happens next year when the Swiss vote on whether or not to let the Jews take them to the cleaners for another $5 billion. You know, I could go on for another 2 hours on this fascinating subject. There are lots of interesting facts I haven't even mentioned yet. The Jews have been so pleased with the way the Swiss are caving into their demands for gold that they're talking about similar claims against Sweden, Portugal, Spain, and Turkey. Hey, why not? When you've got the whole world buffaloed with Holocaust baloney, why not go for everything you can get? Listen, I don't have any more time today, but the newspapers are full of this story, and it provides one of the best ways I know to understand the Jews and the way they work. If you really want to get some insight into the Jewish mentality, go to any big library or to the Internet and start collecting news clippings on these Jewish claims for reparations. Study the details. Try to see the big picture. Make some of the comparisons I've hinted at today, comparisons of the way the Jews look at their history to the way in which other races, other nations, look at their own histories. It will amaze you. It will take your breath away. And it will convince you that it's time for the world to do something about getting this Jewish monkey off its back. Thanks for being with me again today.